Now it's my great pleasure to introduce our next speaker. Sophie Mützel is professor of sociology at the University of Luzern. She has international degrees, Cornell, University of California, Berkeley, Columbia University. Before she started in Luzern, she worked at the WZB and Harvard. She was one of the first colleagues in sociology who specialized on digital sociology based on her experience with network analysis, text analysis, and sociological theory. She is currently the research director of a project called Facing Big Data, Methods and Skills Needed for a 21st Century Sociology. And that qualifies her ideally to speak here as a keynote, to speak here, to contribute a keynote address to this conference. I'm very happy that you're here. The title of the talk is Sociological Research in the Digital Age. Welcome to Sophie Mützel.
Thank you so much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak also on this live stream. And thanks to the camera women who stand behind the cameras. Thank you for the invitation. Generally speaking, my talk will address some of the methodological challenges and opportunities that big data raises for the field of sociology. And if I may, I'm going to shift this a little bit. The discipline of sociology is where I'm at home, and I believe that many of the issues that I'm going to raise will also apply to other social sciences as well. Now, I understand sociology as a science that studies social phenomena. Sociology uses theories on how the social is structured and analyzes data to explain the such phenomena. My talk holds, and this is kind of the general idea, that we are at a watershed moment in sociology in which we as sociologists, we are faced with new types of data and new types of methods to analyze them. I suggest that rather than ignoring such types of data and blindsiding ourselves and such methods, we need to engage with them because otherwise other disciplines working with social data, I'm looking at the engineers, I'm looking at the data scientists, will establish or continue to establish how the social is structured. And we also need to engage because these new types of data and methods offer insights into phenomena that we've long been interested in. For example, change or studying particular dynamics. And I also think these new types of methods offer the possibility for new theorizing. Moreover, I think we as sociologists are in a particular position to think more about data construction. And I'm going to talk about some of the data construction issues using examples of textual analysis. And in this talk, I will particularly focus on large-scale textual analyses. Personally, I find that these are extremely exciting times as a sociologist to participate in the recombination of knowledge, and this is really what we're doing, on data and analytical methods and in puncturing disciplinary boundaries. Now, let me give you an overview. I'm first going to talk a little bit about the rise of big data, then I'm going to speak mostly about challenges for sociology and new opportunities. Using examples from large textual corpora and showing you new modeling techniques. Now, sociology in the last 60 years was dominated by two research methods developed and refined given scarcity of information. One is survey research, which uses survey data, obviously, and government statistics. It uses representative samples, is based on the independence of observations, and is interested in null hypotheses and the refutation of null hypotheses. One of the dominant method is, of course, regression analysis, or different types of regression analysis, that is modeling the relationship between variables. The other dominant research method is inductive iterative research. Here, analysts work in privileged positions in local settings Sometimes we also use document analysis, and we analyze as things are happening, or sometimes ex post. Interviews, observation are also included, as is classic content analyses. These analyses are theoretically guided and thesis-driven, but also use a data-first approach. They go into the field and look at what's happening. Now, with the rise of big data, Savage and Burrs, in an article published in 2007, noticed the crisis, or the pending crisis, of empirical sociology, seeing that survey research, the classic way we're doing survey research, is running into problems of sample selection. We reach less and less, fewer and fewer people using phone talks, and we now have lots of new types of data. A couple of years later, McFarland et al. Note that this is really where what we've arrived at is a watershed moment for the social scientists, where data and methods are being dramatically altered and expanded. And here they refer to the richness and the breadth of new data that likely offers more information than we had in the prior generation of research. And now, given these rise of big data, we see two developments. One is an endogenous development. The field of sociology reacts to new types of data, and I think we can see that in some of what's happening also in German sociology. And we see exogenously induced developments that come from other fields. That is, we have to cope with the skills and the ideas of, I already mentioned, computer science, data science, engineering, who are also working with social data. Now, I want to stress the richness and the breadth of new big data, and the previous speaker already mentioned many things that these, and I'm just giving you a view of a server room, make possible. We can now look at social media postings, but I also would like to stress availability of old big data, that is texts, for example, in digitized archives. And here I bring with you a view of the Library of St. Gallen. And here, just as a working definition, big data for me are data that are large, that are often unstructured, that are diverse. It could be texts, images, films, geospatial codes, timestamps, digitized artifacts, but also lots of repurposed data, right? Data that wasn't meant to be analyzed by us as social scientists, but perhaps collected for other reasons. And these data are for an array of phenomena. Now, what is interesting for us as sociologists, I'd argue, is that they allow us to answer old questions about the social in new ways. We're able to look at the emergence of fields and categories, and detect change and continuity over longer periods of time. And because the methods offer exploration and discovery, we're also able to develop new ideas or possibility for new theorizing. Now, the sociology's challenges and opportunities, I would say, are here for this talk, say that they're threefold. Now we are faced with an abundance of data instead of the scarcity of prior generations. We now need to cope with an all-data revolution. We need to cope with new methods and tools for analyses, and that leads potentially to new theorizing. Now I bring with me a site from Lazard et al. 2014 from Science, who say that instead of focusing on a big data revolution, perhaps it is time that we focus on an all data revolution, which is really the critical change, and using data from all traditional and new sources. Matt Salganik wrote this fantastic book, which I'm sure some of you are very familiar with, which offers a very helpful discussion how to do research using big data and sociology. And he gives us 10 characteristics of big data or digital trace data. Now, the advantages are obviously that they're big, that they're always on, that including not only social media data, but also sensor data, and that they're, in comparison to much of the problems that we've had previously, are non-reactive. Now, of course, there's lots of problems or problematic issues we can talk about. They're incomplete. We don't really know what's missing. They're inaccessible to us researchers. Previous speaker already mentioned it's proprietary data. We don't have access. They're not representatives. You cannot do out-of-sample generalizations because you just don't know what you get. They're drifting. There's changes in who uses the platforms and who creates the data. And they're algorithmically confounded. We have platform bias driven by the goals of the technology. The data's are formatted. They're dirty. We have bots. We have dirty archival data. And they're sensitive. There's ethical and legal issues. Now, there's particular technical skills needed for data collection and to cope with the challenges of these digitized and digital traced data. And I saw leafing through the program that some of the talks in the next couple of days will address some of these issues. One of the issues that I find particularly important is the issue of data construction, and that is the curation that we as analysts conduct when we clean unstructured data. We, of course, curate the data on the basis of many algorithmic, but also manual and non-automated decisions. If you remember the book by Duncan Watts on the common sense, we make lots of common sense decisions in cleaning data and working with data. And I'd argue that sociologies are particularly sensitive to deal with the data construction. Here lies our strength, as opposed to fine-tuning algorithms that are probably much better done by machine learning experts or statisticians. Or computer scientists. And I'd also say that we're acutely aware of the bias in our data and of problems in data constructions, whereas, as Paul DiMaggio so nicely points out, computer scientists trust humans much more than sociologists do. Now, one example I brought with me from my own work is this data construction using archival data. You probably cannot see very much. This is exactly what one of the problems is. This is a review of a sample of my restaurant review data set, where it came. This is a PDF or a picture taken from an archival data. Archival means 1995. It's not very old. And in order to make this machine readable, we had to go through OCRing, making it legible, and make lots of decisions in order to come to a data set that looks like this, ready for analysis. Currently, I'm yet again involved in a project that goes into the depth of OCRing. I'm involved in the project together with folks at the Institute for Analytical Sociology, working on a large-scale corpus of four Swedish newspapers from 1945 to 2019. Digitizing them, making them OCR readable, and eventually machine readable. And this is going to be a huge data set. We have probably lots of data. So we have this issue of data, but we also have this issue, and this is, I find, even more interesting for us as sociology, the new methods and tools for analyses. And what we're looking for is the identifications of patterns given these non-numerical data. And here I'm going to focus in particular on textual data, which is my interest, text as data. Now, computational text analysis in sociology has a tradition in the field of sociology. For example, in the field of political sociology, political science, always been based on texts, on party manifestos, on political proclamations, for example, in social movement research. And we have a number of fields that have delved into this, into how to analyze text. And I brought with me just a sample of a few of them. One is the quantitative narrative analysis by Roberto Franzosi. We have works, old works on semantic text analysis using concepts of networks and semantic triplets, particularly in Franzosi's work. We have even works on co-word analyses in the early 80s. And we have works on narrative networks coded on connections between sentences. Now, the key reference for us sociologists' interest in meaning and relational cultural patterns of meaning is John Moore. John Moore's 1998 article on how to measure meaning structures. All of them are foundational in this field of computational text analysis and sociology. Now, today, we are faced with identification of patterns given large-scale non-numerical data. And this is where the work of historical sociology, cultural sociology, and I'm just mentioning a few of names that may be familiar, Bale, Edelman, Moore, Kozlowski, meet the world of computational social science and political, most likely political texts, the works of Mike Alvarez, Grimmer Stewart, and McFarland et al. Here now we need competencies in computational linguistics, particularly natural language processing, with assumption about language and meaning. We need insights into machine learning algorithms. And of course, and this is an area where I've always worked in, network analysis to find pattern in these data sets. This has been already a sociological tradition going back many, many decades, and now has a revamping through these types of research. And this really results in some sort of text mining and data visualization, whereby we use non-standardized tools. Indeed, probably all of you had to learn to code at least a little bit to work with the data that you're interested in. Substantively, and this I find also extremely interesting, what we see is a shift in attention from causality and validation to plausibility and utility. We're looking at different types of explanations. And machine learning offers us tools for exploration and discovery. Now, I brought with me, because it's again the week of the General Assembly in the United Nations, some of my own work. We were interested in some of the structure of discussions of that global forum. We used a data set from 1970 through 2017 of all speeches of all nations at the General Assembly, which is happening again right now. And because we miss him so much, I brought with me a speech by President Obama. Now, we use some natural language processing and network analysis to show some of these patterns of these 23 million words, almost 88,000 speeches. Now, one is a chord diagram in which we look at the mentionings, how nations mention other nations and ascribe to them some sort of importance. And these are not largely surprising. For example, here the greens are the Americas, and where it gets rainbow-like is all the nations mentioning the US, thanking the US, mentioning the US in some way. So almost all nations mention the US. We also notice some of the geopolitical alliances, sort of former communist countries and African countries working together and talking to each other in these speeches. We were also interested in the structure of speeches based on co-occurrences of terms used. So this is the was the question of how similar are speeches to each other year per year. This is an event that takes place every year. It's a global forum. It's a way to tap into what is the world thinking, what is the world talking about. And so we were interested in what are the patterns of how the world sees itself, how the world talks about itself. And we this is based on a bimodal network analysis of years by speeches. I'm happy to talk about it more later. This is a heat map. And we see some sort of endogenous periodization of three different time frames. We have the early 70s until 89, not very surprisingly, 1990 until 2000, and a markedly different year. You see the big shift here, 2001. You can imagine they met 2001 in September. Something else happened 2001 in September in New York. This was the year where things really started to shift, and the 9/11 and the dealing with terrorism significantly changed how the world talks about itself. Another example is from my work on the emergence of breast cancer therapeutics, and here I just brought with you some results of a topic model analysis on the basis of scientific discussions. This is an unsupervised machine learning algorithm. This is a Gibbs LDA, where I look at how the shift in discussion from one trajectory looking at chemotherapeutic therapies shifts, and here's the shift in the early 2000s to the role of targeted therapeutics. I also use the same data to look at patterns, to look at a pattern in semantic network analysis. Again, this is an unsupervised machine learning algorithm. Here, this is a community detection algorithm. And I look at how the scientific community discusses these different aspects of targeted therapeutics. You can also look at it over time, and this is where I'm really interested in the dynamics, the shifts, the drifts, the changes of, in this case, a scientific field. And this is really where I'm interested in the making of these new targeted therapies and how they come about. And I use this as a heuristic to talk about my case. Now, in this project that is already mentioned, we're now looking systematically at these new skills and tools that are needed for analysis and to expand the methodological toolkit and how this training could look like. We shine our light, and this is the image, onto three fields. We look at our own field of sociology, and look at the methods training in German-speaking universities. We look at the field of data science and how their curricula looks, what they are learning, what's their methods, what their tools. And we look at the field of data journalism to come up with this new toolkit. And I should be sure to say that this is not something that we want to throw out stuff, throw out some old methods, throw out some old tools, but I think we need some new tools and some new skills to put into that toolkit. At Lucerne, my own university, we also stage certain interventions. Of course, we change already the programs to work on this and to promote these types of new tools and methods. Okay. And I also would say that instead of the end of theory, Anderson's famous claim, I would say that new methods allow for an exploration and discovery. And in particular, a previous speaker already mentioned the issue of heterogeneity, or at least looking for particular groups. I think these tools offer a way to characterize these types of heterogeneity, to find subgroups. And I think this is really exciting, and I believe that we're going to spend more time on this in the next couple of years. Okay, to sum up, I focused on the need to expand our methodological horizon and toolkits in response to some of the challenges of big data to reap the rewards for sociological insights. I believe that these new types of data and new types of methods allow us to ask old questions about dynamics, about processes in new ways. We're able to formally analyze culture, its shifts and drifts over time. We need these new skills and these new tools. Both working with social media data and also old digitized data. I also think that we're going to see a relaxation in our disciplinary prepossession. The prepossession, for example, with causality in the statistical sense, or the assumption of A1 best fitting solution. And I think we're also going to see changes in what counts as an explanation. We're moving, if we're looking for pattern, we're looking for types of pattern and not causality. So I think we're going to see more exploratory work instead of confirmatory work. And we need, as a discipline, to cope with interpretive uncertainty because of that. We have a new issues of where at what point we feel comfortable with our results. And that is the shift from causality and validation to plausibility and utility that I mentioned before. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Carsten from Bamberg. Thank you so much for your talk.
Hi.
You mentioned, for example, the pros and cons of digital trace data or process-generated data. And you also mentioned how we used surveys and traditional stuff years before. Can you elaborate a little bit on how we can move the field forward when we actually try to combine both of these approaches or data sources?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's one of the big challenges where lots of experts are already working on, right? Sort of the linkage problem. I think there are some solutions. And particular, I think I would look at Scandinavian countries who have different types of data sets that help us make these linkages even better than our typical normal social science surveys that we run in Central Europe. So I would have to talk to you afterwards to give you some literature recommendations, perhaps. But I think that's a challenge, and I think we don't have the answer yet.
Mart Buys, here's Constance.
I'm not quite clear if I want to do a bachelor program, what would my curriculum look like? How would my curriculum from a standard, you know, methodological training in sociology, what would I need to change?
I think one of the ways to go about this would be to consider from the start what constitutes data, rather than working with kind of already cleaned, pretty data set that are pulled from somewhere. I think we need new skills in this data curation. So, and I would put that before any type of analysis. So before going into the details of statistical analyses or pattern analyses, I would spend more time on different types of data and what you can do. Because my own experience, of course, is that students come to me and say, oh, you know, I want to analyze Twitter data or here my Instagram feed. These are really interesting developments. But they have learned something completely different and they have no idea, and this is fairly difficult, to bring one thing together with this other thing. So I think I would say we need a new focus on this data skills, data curation, data collection, data, just sort of working with this data.
So one question that is regarded to challenges in text analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, text analysis in the way you present it is also a very nice and I think it's a strong methodological tool, especially when it comes to analyze historical data. That's absolutely an advantage. But what about the tools to analyze the meaning of words, so of texts? There are these algorithms that are available in a lot of these software packages that are now on the market. And if you use them, you get some results that are, well, you don't know really what's going on. At least I do not know what's going on when I use this kind of software compared to Stata. Of course, I do not understand all the details that's going on in Stata as well. But in a way, what about the standards of, we will talk about these kind of replicable social research tomorrow in the evening. Is this already consolidated, or would you say you can use these kind of text analysis to frequency analysis? It's easy, yeah, that's clear, and also association analysis goes easy. But these kind of the meaning structure, what about this in terms of the scientific core, so to speak?
So there's multiple ways to answer this question. One of the ways would be to say, and I perhaps could have expanded on that, is the puncturing of the disciplinary boundaries and to work especially for research in interdisciplinary teams. Now, I mentioned this Swedish research project that looks at trajectories and patterns of discussions on migration in Sweden. We're a group of political scientists, sociologists, and machine learning experts. So we have our experts who do the interesting, who run the interesting algorithms on word embeddings. You know, topic modeling has been passé, and it's the new thing. And this is extremely helpful. So we have people who are very knowledgeable and are interested in algorithmic developments, whereas we're interested in the substantive issues. So work interdisciplinary, I think that's one of the issues. And the other issues is fundamentally about these machine learning algorithms that, in particular, the unsupervised machine learning algorithms have, and there's people working on this, but they have issues in the replicability. That's not as easily possible. So here again, we have the field of computer science, which comes in and helps us develop these types of things. So interdisciplinary is the answer, as always.
Okay, thank you.
You made the interesting argument that we see more exploratory work in the near future. But I wonder if there's not the chance with sociology kind of merging with that work that has already been done in data science by people who have no training in social science research, that we actually bring causality and explanation kind of back in something that might evolve to become a social data science. Because we in sociology have a strong discourse on causality, mm-hmm. and we have experience with dirty and imperfect data, and also mm-hmm. we have the theory. So I wonder, mm-hmm. as a counterpoint, if mm-hmm. is that not something that that is the promise, possibly, of the two perspectives working together?
Absolutely. But what we see right now is things moving the other way. I mean, it'd be great if, and again, my speaker before me mentioned this, it'd be great if Facebook and Twitter would hire even more sociologists who are trained like that. Unfortunately, there are some, as we know, but not as many. And so, yes, I mean, that would be one way to go about. But I also think that we as a discipline, and this is sort of the puncturing idea, I'm not saying that it goes in one direction, but I think things are happening in both directions, and this is why it's so exciting to be a sociologist.